What's up, brother?
How we doing, man?
Good.
Yeah?
We're back at camp. I'm very tired today. My eyes are very puffy.
I'm wide awake. I'm heavily caffeinated.
Dude, I'm
probably three shots deep on espresso already.
I like woke up and I tried to go back asleep and then I started getting, it sounded like, it's like this weird vibrating sound in one of my ears. And then I felt like I was getting a sleep paralysis this morning.
Is that tinnitus?
It's a type of tinnitus, but it's like, I don't know. It was weird. I felt very weird. And then I got up and I came here and now I'm just very tired. I don't know why.
You look okay though.
Thank you. Is it because I'm wearing Mouse's t-shirt? Mouse Powell, we were fighting this morning.
Yeah, I like when you and Mouse get in fights. We have a group chat with Mouse. What's our group chat called?
I forget.
Real pieces of shit.
Yeah. You sent a daily motivation thing that said a $10 shirt on a fit body looks better than a $100 shirt on a not fit body. Yeah. And then Mouse said, that's why I wear $10 shirts and Ryan spends $200 on a shirt of ET. And I said, Mouse, I literally look better in your clothes than you do.
So he said no. So you wore the shirt to prove it to everybody.
Mouse's shirt to the episode.
That you look better. So the record shows.
The record shows. It's just, it's better. I'm sorry, dude.
He wore it better, dude.
Sorry, Mouse. I just had to do it, you know, because Mouse went and got a carp tattoo yesterday on his arm.
He did. He's doing a lot of things like that to compensate for your active fishing that you've been doing. So like if he doesn't catch enough fish and you've been catching more fish than him, he does these things where he has to go get a fish tattoo.
Yeah. See, that's the difference between me and Mouse too, is that I do things and he thinks about them. That's the difference. So me and Mouse Powell, yeah, he can, you know, paint as many pictures of fish on his body, but I'll just go catch him instead, you know?
Yeah, I'll do that. Okay. Yeah.
Well, wow. My family's in town right now, so I've actually been fishing a lot. I've been taking my dad out.
Oh, nice. How long have they been in town for?
I think like 3 or 4 days.
Awesome. How are they doing?
They're doing pretty good. I don't know. Yeah, I went fishing with my dad for a few mornings, and I'm going to go to dinner with them tomorrow.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. My grandpa's in the hospital, I guess. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. That sucks.
Yeah.
Where does your grandpa live?
They live in Chicago.
Okay. When's the last time you saw your grandpa?
Probably 15 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Wow. Are you guys going to go see him?
Probably should. Yeah, he like fell and hurt himself, and my grandma's also getting kind of old, so yeah. I need to go out there. But also part of me is kind of, I think one of the reasons I haven't gone out there is that like my grandma has problems with like Alzheimer's and dementia and stuff, and it's like, do I really want to see her like that? Like, I don't think it will be for me, not for her. She's not really gonna know, you know what I mean? So does it matter if I go?
I would,
I don't know.
Yeah, I would if I were you.
Yeah, I love Chicago. I want to go back anyways. Mm-hmm. I go see them. And
that's cool. That's cool your parents are in town, because you don't get to see them as often since they moved.
Yeah, no, they're in town from Washington, and just been kind of hanging out, trying to see them as much as possible.
So did they come here for Easter?
No, I mean, they got here there. I don't think it was like
Easter. Did you guys hang out on Sunday?
I can't remember. No, I went fishing with my dad in the morning. But
nice. I hung out with my mom and Ken on Sunday, and my mom pulled out the old photos.
Nice.
And dude, it's actually really cool. I saw so many photos from my childhood that I hadn't really seen before or don't remember seeing. And it was just really cool. It's weird how you can see a photo and it can actually take you back and you can remember more from your childhood than you're like, oh, I completely forgot about that.
We were the Catastro boys were sharing childhood photos back and forth the other day. It was really funny. Well, Tanner has some ones where he looks a little zesty, I'll have to tell you.
Yeah. It's funny. No, dude.
He was like a blonde, cute little boy.
Yeah, no, well it's kinda cool that your parents came to visit during the same week that I was with my mom looking at old photos. So you hit up your parents for the old photos. Tanner was getting photos from his family. Because we've been working on something special, and like, to see a bunch of photos from like our childhood, up until now. I don't know.
There's a picture of me with my grandpa gave me a guitar when I was like 9.
I love that photo, dude.
And I'm wearing I'm kind of I'm wearing clothes that I would wear now, but it's a Big Dog t-shirt and it's the X-Files themed.
Bro, I literally saw that photo and I was like, Ryan still dresses the same. This is awesome.
It's like blue jeans, vintage shirt. And
what's funny is that that shirt is like a vintage shirt now, but actually that shirt probably was printed that year.
That was probably a $10 shirt that I would spend $200 on now.
Exactly. Anyways, today we thought it would be a cool episode to... make this all about Sucker and break down the album Sucker, which in a lot of ways changed things a lot for the band.
Yeah, it's our last release, you know, all with Andy, and it's one of my favorite albums, and that was definitely one where, like, you know, Washed kind of changed things a little bit, and that was like a very important one. But after Sucker was like, oh shit, things are actually starting to happen. So
yeah, Washed, when we put out Washed, that was definitely the album where we were like, okay, we actually have fans across the country.
Yeah.
And then when we put out Sucker, the feeling of momentum within the band and the camp and just how we all felt with our whole team, with management and the band members and everything, was very much so like, all right, the ball's moving. Like, it's going, it's not going to stop now.
Yeah.
I remember that. That's how it felt to me.
Yeah. It was really exciting. It was like, we were getting good news every week. You know, it was just like things were starting to happen. Shows were coming our way, better shows, you know, were coming our way, more opportunities, more everything.
Like, it was obvious that, like, because of the momentum and how the album was doing, that the next few years were definitely like loaded up with, you know, a lot of stuff we were going to be doing.
Yeah.
But I guess, should we take it from the top?
Yeah, let's go like back to 2020.
Should we go back to March of 2020?
Should we go to Wuhan?
Should we take them? Should we take them to Wuhan?
Yeah, let's go back to the...
So, I guess where it would start is in March of 2020, we started a... March is spring, right? Yeah, spring?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's spring. We had a spring tour, headlining tour planned. And this was a little bit after Sucker had come out, right?
No, Sucker.
Or sorry, before
Tropical Heartbreak.
Sorry, after, that's what I meant. Tropical Heartbreak came out. But I remember the tour that we had planned in the beginning of March. It was like, I think it was like 20 shows. And it wasn't really like for an album release or anything. It was kind of like an in-between
tour. We had already done
the Tropical Heartbreak tour.
And so this was just, we were getting back on the road right away. And, you know, we had Serenation was opening, and was there anyone else? It was just them. I think it was them.
Yeah, I think it was them. But yeah, we had just finished the Tropical Heartbreak tour and the big 2019 summer tour with Iration, which was like two and a half, it was like 45 shows or something.
Yeah, we were
touring a lot.
And it was getting heavy. Like, our tour manager just quit at the time. Colby, I'll call you out on that. No, but, our tour manager had just quit. And so I remember, like, I was programming lights for that tour that we were going on in March. And so, like, I like programmed all the lights to Ableton, and then I was going to tour manage the tour. And so, like, I'm advancing all the shows, and we get to the first show, which is in Las Vegas, right? And I'm just kind of realizing how difficult this tour is going to be. We were burnt out from the last Tropical Heartbreak tour, all that. You had just gone back from Europe with the main.
Yeah, like a week before. Literally a week before the March tour started, I had gotten home from Europe, and I was feeling sick.
Yeah.
And it was right when people in Europe were getting COVID, so it was before it hit in the US.
Yeah. And we play Las Vegas, which is like one of our shittiest markets ever. Like, we never have done really great in Vegas. And it was the same night as 311 Day.
Yeah, the show sucked. It was like, there wasn't that many people
there.
We
pull up, it's the worst. Like, we're in a restaurant in a casino. It's like not even like a real venue. I'm setting up all these fucking lights all day. You're starting to feel sick. And we're like, do you have COVID? Because you were just in Italy, where it was like had first gone off. And it was just like, you know, everything. I was like, I was really feeling overwhelmed, and I was looking at this like, I was kind of dreading the next 20 days or shows or whatever, because I was like, oh man, we're first day is going rough. But while we're there, we're closing out, we get like, you know, settle up with the people at the venue, get like paid or whatever, and we start hearing like, oh, Washington just canceled all events, and we're like, damn, like that's crazy, because it felt early and it didn't, there wasn't, I didn't know anybody in Arizona or in the country that had it. I'm sure, I think it was like just starting to pop up.
Yeah. So then we go to Flagstaff.
Well, yeah, so like that first day we hear Seattle's closing all events, Washington in general, and then we hear, I think Colorado was doing the same. It was like there was two spots, and we're like, okay. So the next show is Flagstaff, Arizona, and then the show after that was supposed to be Tucson. So we get to Flagstaff, another shitty venue, good turnout. It was a lot of fun.
I remember that show being a lot of fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we get to Flagstaff and we perform, and while we're there, it's just we keep getting texts. And
well,
it's like,
I remember before the show, we had a VIP package set up before the shows for this tour that was set up. And I remember in Flagstaff that day when we pulled up to the venue, we sound checked, and then we were all kind of sitting around. We were like, is it sus to be like shaking people's hands and giving people hugs? And like, cause our meet and greets are very like, yo, how you doing? Like we're hugging fans and talking, and people are talking this close to your face usually.
Yeah.
And then I remember us being like, ah, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah. It was kind of like, it wasn't really a thing yet. So we didn't know what was going on. And so we played that show. And that night we get to our hotel, and it had like half the shows that we were supposed to hit on the tour were like in states that were now shutting down events. And they call us and they're like, hey, pretty much we're canceling the tour because everywhere it's like not feasible for you guys to, you know, go to here and then take 2 weeks off and go to Florida and hope that, you know, these places don't cancel in the meantime. And so we had to call the tour that night, and it was a weird feeling because it was like, I never wanted to cancel a tour, but I was also like, I was burnt the fuck out, dude. Like I remember just being like, this is going to be so hard. And I knew it was going to be a very long next like month or so. And so luckily we were in Arizona when it canceled, and we go home, and
I remember being relieved. It's funny, like we had done so much touring, and especially because I had just been in Europe for like over a month, I was just so tired. And when it did get canceled, this sounds kind of messed up, but I remember when we were in Flagstaff together, I remember we were all at a coffee shop in the morning together when we got the call from our agent saying like, everything's being canceled right now, you guys got to go home. I remember thinking, all right, this is weirdly exciting. I know. Like I hate saying that, but like the fact that there was like a global pandemic and everything was getting shut down, and like there was like sadly an element to that was like, wow, this has never happened before. This is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Not saying that it was cool or anything, but
then
also we were itching as a band to write new music, and we had already been talking about how much we want to write new music. And we knew like, all right, the next thing after this tour is we're gonna write for a new album.
We thought we were gonna have like 2 weeks like usual. We were planning on maybe booking out 2 weeks and just writing another album and having that be the album. But
so we drive home, and I'm pretty sure we took that 2 week period when everything was getting shut down, everyone was in their homes. I don't think we met up for the first like 2 weeks. But after that 2 weeks went by, you know, they're still telling people like, don't go hang out with friends, don't do anything, stay at home. And we were kind of all just like, fuck this, let's go make some music.
Yeah, it was scary. It was weird though, because like Andy was still partying out with people all the time, and we're like,
and
dude,
we didn't know how serious it was. Like at that time, it's like, this is a new disease, this is like a new thing that who knows like what's going to actually happen, because we didn't know anyone that had caught it yet either.
No, yeah. Andy got it pretty quick though.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think we took a little bit longer than 2 weeks, because there was that time where like everything was, you couldn't go anywhere except for a grocery store. Remember? It was like,
yeah,
everything was really shut down in Arizona. And I know we weren't recording then, but
I think it was, we honestly only took a few weeks down though, maybe a month,
right? Yeah.
Maybe 3 weeks. And then, we started talking about how we wanted to write, and Andy's buddy, Cabo Dave, told Andy that he had a house that he owned that was not being used and no one was living in, up in North Scottsdale. And Andy texted the group chat and he's like, yo, like one of my buddies has a house that's literally empty. Like we can move all our shit in there and start writing. And so we pulled the van and trailer up to this house, on Union Hills, and unloaded everything from the trailer into this house. We had our drums, guitars, yeah, all the studio gear set up. And
it was like a makeshift vocal booth where it was just blankets on mic stands that were raised up to like the ceiling. So there's like, yeah, a backdrop for Andy. And we just sat there and we got like zipperitas to go because this
I remember. So when we started these sessions, which would then turn into Sucker, I remember the first like three or four songs we wrote together, or like the first couple days we met up at this house, we were just kind of getting things out of our system and nothing was really clicking yet.
Yeah.
And then the first song that we wrote as a band that was like, okay, this feels like this could be the new wave, was 100 Rips.
Yeah.
And
you started that one with Austin Jones, right?
Yeah.
So there was a couple sessions that we had done. Were they before we went to that house or after? Because I did two sessions with Austin Jones, and just me and Andy and Austin, and then you did one session with just you and Andy and Austin.
Well, I don't remember where you did the session with Austin, because we hadn't moved into our studio yet at that point. That's why we moved into Union Hills.
I'm almost positive we rented that studio for it though. Or like we booked out that
we did later.
Spot.
That was the second location we did for Sucker. It wasn't, the first location we did for Sucker was that North Scottsdale house. So
no, I'm saying with the sessions with, Jones, I can't remember. Doesn't really matter though.
I'm not quite sure, but, yeah, the way 100 Rips started was actually really cool. I put one microphone over my drum kit and recorded the intro beat, and I just looped that. And then this is so dumb, but for some reason I was telling Andy, like, I think we just had like a bass line and a drum beat or something, and I told Andy, I was like, dude, we need like an anthem like chorus, like, and I started singing Sum 41 to him, Fat Lip, and he's like, yeah, that song was fire. And then he started singing the hook for 100 Rips. And me and Jones were like, that's sick. Let's do something with that. And then you and Tanner came over to the house and you guys put bass and guitar in it. And we started really fleshing it out as a band. And after, I just remember after we made 100 Rips, we were like, all right, this is kind of a wave. And every time we've made an album in the past, there's this one song that we make that we then are like clicked into this wave length with each other. And then we just ride that. And like, you have to find it though. It's like, sometimes it takes longer or shorter than other times, but like there's like this, that's how I've always experienced it. I want to know what you think, but for me, it's always been like we tap into this wave and we're all on it together and then we just ride it till the album's done.
Yeah, it sets the bar. And we were also on like a cool vibe at the time because we had just done a cover. We had been asked to cover Scarlet Begonia's Sublime version of the Grateful Dead song, and so we were like
into like the heavy jams.
We
and shit.
Did this, yeah. We did this like a couple months beforehand, and we like, all right, we want to do this, you know, Sublime track, but we need to make it our own without pissing off Sublime fans and without pissing off Grateful Dead fans, which is hard to do, you know. And so I remember thinking, like, I remember saying to everyone, it's like, we need to bring out more of the Grateful Dead vibe in the song. So it's still rappy, but it has more of this jam band element. And we were all on the same page as, like, you know, Tropical Heartbreak wasn't a very successful album for us compared to other ones. And we were kind of like, we were all on the same page as far as wanting to bring more live instruments back and you know, mixing that with the production.
Well, in a lot of ways too, when we were starting to have conversations about what the next album would maybe sound like, we did talk about how I think with Tropical Heartbreak, we kind of copied Washed in a lot of ways, yeah, because Washed works so well, and I think we didn't like, I don't think we creatively pushed ourselves to do something really different when we made that album.
Right. Yeah.
But that being said, like Tropical Heartbreak, even though the band talks about that album that way, that album was really meaningful to a lot of our fans.
Oh, absolutely.
And,
yeah,
and a lot of those songs, I really do love a lot of the songs on that album. Like Pine is one of my favorite songs we've ever made.
Yeah.
Pine is epic. And
I think
like,
Older Me Too is like, yeah, a really like catchy song.
Yeah, that, there's some really great songs on that really album. Took off. But like you said, you know, so, we were ready to do something different.
Yeah, we're ready to do something different. We're just off the back of like adding more of like a jam band vibe in with like a little bit of like reggae stuff, which is like before that, we never really were adding any of that element, even though we already were in that scene and everybody thought we were a reggae band. We never were like, hey, let's add some stuff. So we're like, we'll just write songs that we love and then we'll just add the like little reggae vibe to it afterwards. And
well, that was like an afterthought too. Yeah, it was like you know what, like all of our fans, like we are in the reggae scene.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean we have to make reggae songs, but like let's just put a little skank here or there and like trick them.
Yeah, we would do it if it added to the song. If it didn't add to the song, then we just left it out. And it's like, but our main priority was like writing good songs and not like writing a reggae song, because it's like we weren't a reggae band, so it wouldn't be super convincing, I think, if we just tried to make a reggae album. And so Sucker is not that. It's like Sucker felt to me more like what the sound of what this band was supposed to be for a very long time, you know?
Dude, I totally agree, and I feel like yeah, I feel like we captured the way the band sounds live in a sense better than we ever had on previous albums.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just remember it having such a, like that summer, dude, when we started Sucker in that house, it was such an exciting summer for me, because it was also the time where I was starting to learn a lot more about vocal production and like getting vocals to sound good. And like I was really asking Matt a lot of questions and watching everything he was doing. And then like, I was like living at that house. I was just there so much. Like after Catastro sessions would be done, I would invite like random artists over to like try to record them to, you know what I mean? Like just get better at recording and stuff. And I just remember us having so much fun in that house because everything was shut down.
Yeah.
And we were just doing what we loved. And it was like, I don't know. It's a really fun time period when I look back, because I just remember this feeling.
There's also kind of this aspect of like you weren't supposed to be around people, so it was kind of like, like we're just like drinking in this empty house. Yeah, like there's no furniture there really, like maybe a couch, but we're just but yeah, so it's like we were on this cool vibe. You guys did 100 rips. And it kind of set the mood, because there had been 3 or 4 days that we were trying to write stuff and it just nothing was clicking, and we just like leave. And I think that was part of us being still kind of burnt out from the tours, and the world is getting kind of weird and scary at times.
And we just didn't know what we were going to do yet. We didn't know what the album was maybe going to sound like.
Right.
So like that, and that's one thing I've always loved about our band. I love that we were always able to just sit in a room and jam. And if something was whack, we'd be like, all right, whatever. And then we'll do another one. If it's whack, whatever. Cool. But we never release. It's like, we never sat down and were like, hey, we're going to make an album that sounds like Sucker. That sounds like what it ended up being.
Right.
It was more like you said, like catching the vibe. And
we wanted more band, like live band elements. And we definitely wanted it to be more upbeat and happier, because we had gone pretty dark with Tropical Heartbreak. And the one before that was Wash, which was also kind of dark. So it was like there was this long era of like almost 3 or 4 years of like really dark kind of tracks.
Well, I remember Andy saying we were all sitting in the studio or in that house, and he's like, you know, it could be kind of cool, guys, if like I talked like nice about girls on this album. and we all started laughing and we're like, yeah, that could be good, bro. That could be nice to like talk nice about the girls instead of, he's like, yeah, I'll talk good about them instead of like how they make me feel like shit. And we're like, all right, dude, that's sick. And so he really kind of leaned into that. And I mean, not on all the songs, like The Way I Feel is kind of, you know, about
But that one's more still fun and confidence. And it's like there's all these aspects of like owning yourself and your own mistakes in it. Like maybe I'm a sucker.
Yeah.
I'm just going under.
Yeah.
Like I'm a lover, not a fighter. Kind of like this. Like I don't really know why I keep making these mistakes, but I'm probably going to continue making them. And I just want to be better, but we'll figure out how it goes.
And that's what's really interesting about sucker in general is that I think in a lot of ways, the lyrics and that, like what you just said, there was, I think at that time period, there were two fragmented parts of Andy. There was the part of him that really wanted to stop making the same mistakes and like, just be better, do better, you know, get rid of some of those issues that he had.
Yeah.
But then there was another part of him that really loved the thrill of that lifestyle.
Right.
Yeah. And so it was these two like pieces of him that were coming together that made the album really interesting. And lyrically, you know, like there are concepts in there where you can see that there's parts of him that want to change and there's, but like I'm sucked back, I keep getting sucked back in. You know what I mean? It's like, it's really interesting too, to that being a segue into where we are now. And like, obviously can't wait to talk about that new album when the time's right. But like, that it really is kind of a wild story when you listen to it like that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, are there any, like, do you have favorite tracks or stories for tracks that you like?
I do remember when we made The Way I Feel, I remember Matt started playing those keys.
Yeah.
And when Andy said, I just want to let you know your attitude is fucking whack.
Yeah.
I remember all of us being like, what, dude, that's sick. And I remember, when we made the chorus and, we had it on loop.
Yeah.
All of us, I remember at one point, all of us having our hands up being like we were at the show hearing it and all of us had this feeling like, yo, this is going to be the one. This is going to be a big one.
There was a definite moment of all of us being like, this is the song. Like, this is the track.
Which is funny because in the past, none of us have been right about that ever.
Yeah.
Like, really ever. Like, we don't ever know what the biggest song is going to be on an album. We guess sometimes. Sometimes we're wrong. I personally really believe this. I believe there is no way to know. And I think that you just don't know what people are going to resonate with. But that one, we did have a very strong feeling that it would, and it did.
Yeah.
Because it's just like a breakup anthem.
I know when we played our album release show, the song had only been out for like a week or something. And
it's one of my favorite memories, dude.
We've talked about it before, but we put a break in the song where it stops and people think it's just ended early or whatever. And then the crowd, like, you know, 2,000 people all screamed all the rest of the lyrics, and it had only been out for like a couple of days, I think. And they knew every single word to it. And that was like that. I remember Andy turning around and being like, what the fuck?
Andy turned around and looked at me like,
and then like, oh, there's so many cool memories with that song. Cause it's like, then we went and did the Suns like finals halftime show thing, and like playing that for the like sold out stadium was like fucking cool. It was weird because you're in like this back corner, but that was just like this experience of like, when I think of that album, like that's definitely the song.
Yeah. I also remember too, like the first initial Sucker Summer Run tour that we did to support the album coming out. I remember, you know, like, and this was like you said, like a week or two after the album came out, and we started hitting cities across the West Coast. And even the songs on Sucker that we were playing live that weren't pushed as singles when the album dropped, those songs were heavily being sung back to us, like with the crowd. And like
Drop Top was
It was just like, it was washed times, like, you know, on another level, like a perception of like how people were responding to the songs. And like, I remember that feeling so exciting because like there is a part of the album cycle for me over the years, like when we make an album and put it out, that's one part of it. And then when you go on tour and you're hearing people sing the songs back to you, it's almost like another version of releasing the album. It's like, it's like the album comes to life.
Well, when you're playing songs live too and getting it ready for a tour, you kind of make changes to make it you know, better life.
Yeah,
and then that's when it comes into its like full potential, I think, to me, is the mix of like, it's more live than what the album is. And, you know, we've always prided ourselves on our live show and how we perform live and stuff. So
yeah, for sure.
One of my favorites was Pocket Fulla, and that was one where
that's my favorite song to play live.
That's where the one that me and Andy and Jones started. And I just remember I wanted to do a song that, cause like we had done Naked and I had made the like upstroke thing. We didn't really know what to do with just those upstroke sounds. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody wasn't very into that song at first until we teamed up with our friend Colton Avery and he helped us with the chorus. And once we had that chorus, it was like, oh, this is how it's supposed to be.
So good,
but I love like the playful fun vibe of it. And so when we started making a Pocket Fulla, Austin Jones was with us. And I remember just being like, dude, I want like an LCD sound system type track and I want to rip off Dance Yourself Clean.
Which is funny because it sounds nothing like that now. You know what I mean?
It kind of does though. It's like, it's similar enough. It's not, it's different, obviously. But like, I love that it has that like inspiration because still when I hear it, I'm just like, I fucking love LCD sound system as it is. And it's just like that vibe is so different for that scene and stuff. And we made, you know, the song, we changed obviously a lot and it's not like a ripoff of it, but it definitely was heavily inspired by, you know, one of my favorite songs ever.
To me, when I listen to Pocket Fulla, it makes me feel like it's just like I'm riding with my crew anthem. Like you're like, I feel like, I don't know if this is even right, but I feel like our fans, when they listen to that song, feel like they're in our band and they're like just cruising with us.
There's like,
that's like how it feels to me.
The one thing I love about like Dirty Heads and is they would have these songs where you would listen to it and when you're driving in your car and you just kind of feel cooler. You know what I mean?
Dude,
and I feel like
Pocket Fulla is 100%.
Pocket Fulla is that song.
That's the best way to
describe it. Drop Top is also that, where you're just like, you're listening to it and you feel cool that you're able to listen to it. And
yeah,
I was like, we fucking did that. Like it was like so this weird feeling that like you can't really explain or it's not talked about, but it's like there's some songs where you just listen to it and you just feel cooler.
Like, dude.
And so that one's, it's fun. It's got the playful, like, you know, vibra slap stuff that you did and all these like cool little elements. And the guitar is fucking amazing on it. And live, it went off because we had like outros and stuff. But it was just like,
yeah. You know, one other thing about Sucker in general that that I really appreciated was the amount of time that we had to work on it, because we ended up spending a year on the record. You know,
right.
We didn't really go into this too much in depth, but like, you know, Sucker was made in three separate locations. It was made at that house in Union Hills. And then we did a third of the record at Matt's house in Miami, Arizona.
Yeah.
He's got, this is actually kind of an important piece of the making of the record, because he's got these very tall ceilings where in his house, he's got a 3-story house. So the ceilings are massive and it's a cheat code for drums, because drums sound incredible in there. The drums just sound massive. So that was a really big sound for the Sucker record, like having the drums sounding like that. And I remember, just being able to spend a lot of extra time and have ample time to like do all the percussion and weird little percussion things that I wanted to do, that usually when you're making songs really fast, you don't have time to sit there for an hour and mess with like a percussion sound.
Yeah.
But like I had time to do that stuff and it was so fun. Like we used Andy's dad's congas on the whole album. And I was able to just do a bunch of live percussion, hitting like a hydro flask in front of a bunch of mics. And same with you guys. Like, I just feel like we had so much more time to do all the weird little creative things that really all added up to something really special and kind of different than what we had ever done in the past.
Well, at the same time too, like I just bought a Sub 37 like Moog synthesizer, and before that I'd had a smaller Moog one that I would do for live, but I learned the basics of sound design and subtractive synthesis, if you want to be a nerd about it. I learned the basics of it, but I got this one, Sub 37, had so much more options to it, and I started diving in and I was like every day just learning more and more and more about it. And I was not like very, like now I'm super fast at it, but at that time it was so new to me. So I was making all these mistakes that would end up with these weird sounds and stuff. And that album, like, you know, the leads on The Way I Feel and all that stuff, there's a lot more synth sounds that I'm like really proud of, like, you know, Paco Fola, all of that stuff, where I was able to like, I'm learning at the same time. And it was exciting for me to be like, I'm not just playing bass. I'm doing also.
You're utilizing this stuff you're learning on the new record.
On the new record. And it's like, that's where I always feel like I come up with like the most, my favorite stuff of my work, you know, is just like those moments where I'm like excited. I'm learning about something new. And like, I feel that now with, I feel like every time I get a new instrument, if it like really latches onto me, then it kind of changes the way I write and it like improves things. And like,
yeah.
Not saying that, like, you know, if you're stuck, go buy a new instrument and then you'll be fine. But that's how I feel now with the Moog Matriarch synthesizer, where it's semi-modular and I'm getting even deeper into the weirdo, nerdy sound design stuff. But it's like they just can add a whole new world to it. And that was just such an exciting time. All of us staying, sleeping at Matt's, you know. And drinking, then the, and cooking, then
the,
doing
so
everything.
So the third location that we finished the album at was our studio, which we had moved into in the middle of the making of Sucker, our studio in Tempe, Arizona. And I remember feeling really stoked that we got to finish the album in our new studio that we had moved into. All of our gear was finally there.
At the time, it was just, we were just going to book it for a month.
Yeah,
right?
it wasn't
like our spot.
Yeah, so we finished the album in this studio. But yeah, you're right. So it wasn't technically our studio yet. We had only asked to stay there for a month.
Yeah.
And then once we finished Sucker, we were all like, Andy wanted to make another EP, which was not for sale too, right?
Yeah.
So we kind of just kept writing because we couldn't tour yet.
Well, and like, yeah, the deeper we got into our album process, the deeper the world shut down and everything got even more like uncertain with, you know, we originally probably would have finished the album a lot quicker, but we were like, oh, we can't even release an album right now because we can't tour. So let's just take our time. And that's kind of what forced us for the first time. Our last three albums before that, we would book out
2 week periods or something.
2 weeks max, you know, and just be like, all right, every song that we write, these 2 weeks is going to be on the album. That's just what the album is. And it's like, it can work and it has worked for us in the past, but it's also, you're stuck with everything. Like everything you have is all you have. Then if we, once we had a full year to go like, okay. And it ended up being worth it. You know, we dropped the album and we were able to play shows right when we came back, and it was still kind of like uncertain when we went on that first Sucker tour, but it was probably the most exciting time in our band's history.
I think so too, man. I think so too. And I remember having conversations where we were all like, yo, it's happening. Let's go. Like, strap in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we were getting better slots on the festivals. We were getting better. Everything was just like moving faster and bigger and better. And people were noticing too, because it's like, it's hard to ignore that like all the, our crowds are doubling and tripling in sizes everywhere we go. And cool.
You know what I remember, dude? I remember Cali Vibes 2022. When we played Cali Vibes 2022, that was the last Cali Vibes we did with Andy. And, you know, Sucker had been out for a little over a year probably. And we got asked to do a meet and greet after our performance at Cali Vibes.
Yeah.
And so we're like, whatever.
I think you're thinking about the one in Florida, the Reggae Rise Up.
That's where we did the acoustic performance, right?
I can't remember. Sorry, I might have interrupted you for no reason.
It's all good. It was one of the festivals that we did after Sucker had been out for a year. And we got asked to do a meet and greet at like a Sierra Nevada tent. And so we show up and we think, like, oh, there's going to be like 20 fans there, you know?
Yeah.
And dude, we were at this tent for 4 hours.
It was insane.
And there was a line of hundreds of people that wanted to meet Catastro and come meet us, get our autographs, take pictures with us, and like just so many people expressing like how much they love the new record, and like fans from all across the country, because it was one of those festivals, either Cali Vibes or Reggae Rise Up or whatever, where fans are flying from all across the country to come see this thing. And I just remember thinking, like, damn, this is wild. We have a lot of people that mess with our music and support us. Because one thing that people don't understand is like, and I don't know what this is. Like, I think for me, I definitely do think I struggle with imposter syndrome. But there's this element of like when your band does start getting any sort of success, like a part of you just doesn't really believe it because you've spent so much time eating shit. Yeah. At least for us, that's our story. You know, I know some bands maybe have something happen on TikTok in the first year they're an artist. For our band, it was very grassroots. Like, we're touring for years. No one's really coming to the shows. And then things finally start happening. And when they do, it's just like, I can't really believe this. Are they actually here for us? Or did someone, like, I remember having thoughts in my head, like, do they like think they're at a different meet and greet right now? Like, that, do they think Dirty Heads are sitting here or something? Like,
that show too, one of the, I always get the California and the Florida ones confused, but it's like, yeah, so like we do the meet and greet and that line is so like hundreds of people, like couple hundred people probably just in single file line going all the way back. And I'm realizing like how long we're going to have to be standing there. It's like, dude, this is crazy. And then also like that performance we did right beforehand, we were on the side stage. Like there's like the main stage and then there's another like big stage that's in a different area. And that's the one we were on. And you know, right before we go on, there's like nobody in front of the stage. And I was like, oh fuck.
And then
like,
we murdered.
Dude, as soon as we walk out, you just see people running. And our stage was fucking packed. It was like fire, almost more people than what was going on at the main stage at the time. And you're just like, oh damn, this is crazy. So it's like everybody's running to us. We go do the thing. There's a huge line. And it was just this like, there's this weird, everywhere we went, it was just like things. Like I got recognized at a Whole Foods in the middle of nowhere in Virginia. And she's like, are you in Catastro? And I was like, did they like tell you to say that to me? I just thought it was like a joke. You guys are pranking me or something. But it's like, it just started happening more and more where we would be in like really weird areas and people would be like, oh my God, are you guys Catastro? And another moment of that was when after Sucker had came out, we were all in Denver and we're walking around and we're looking for like food. And as we're walking, we turn a corner and our song starts playing at this restaurant that we just happened to be walking past.
I'll
at that
never
moment.
Forget that, bro. Flow. I think they were playing Flow out in the streets. And I was like, oh, this is so cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
And we were playing like, there that night, right?
Yeah, we were playing there that night. We just happened to be there and we happened to be on that corner at the exact time as soon as the song started.
And here's the thing, dude. Like for me, it's like there's a part of it is like, sure, you have to admit that a part of your ego loves that. Like, yeah. I'll completely admit that. Like, when you're on stage and there's thousands of people screaming and,
fuck
like, you're doing
that's why you do it.
I mean,
it
feels, no, not fully. There's a part of it that's why I do it. But there's also a part of, like, becoming bigger as a band that's really exciting is because you made this thing with all of your friends that you have forever always thought is so sick and so cool and so unique. And you're finally experiencing other people that are catching on and realizing how sick it is. And you're like, see, like
it's a little validating.
Yeah,
you're not,
well, not
like,
only that, but it's just like it's like really fun to share it with other people and have them involved in it. And like to me, that's like so exciting.
Yeah, it's like this. I can't tell if I'm going crazy because I've like, you know, ruined all these relationships, or I've put all these sacrifices away to like for this band, and then for it to finally start being like other people are like, hey, you guys are doing something cool. And you're like, oh, it's not just me. Like like other people are starting to believe in it. And that's such a great feeling because it's like, we love this thing more than anything else in our lives since we were kids. And all we want is other people to feel the same way.
And then all these other people start feeling like, they like, are you meet people that are more fans of the band than you are and you're in the band.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's sick.
Yeah.
It's, you know what I mean? It's like, man, that's so cool that the music could help you and maybe get you through something even on a higher level than what it maybe did for us. Like that's such a cool part of music to me.
Definitely.
Well, yeah.
Damn.
Sucker.
Well,
the Sucker era was great, man.
Yeah, man.
Shout
exciting.
To everyone that supported us during the Sucker era because the next one is going to be even crazier.
Yeah.
And that's it. We'll end it there.
Thank you all for coming to camp.
Love you guys, man.